You are listening to The Warehouse, a Speaking of show by WFSU. The United States of America is celebrating its 250th anniversary, and Tom Flanagan is about town discussing how Florida and Tallahassee are connected to the Revolution. Tom is joined by Suzanne Smith, WFSU's executive producer of television, to discuss how some local historical figures are tied to the birth of the country. Suzanne also sits down with a local author whose family fought in the War of Independence and went on to aid the growth of Florida.
Gee, Suzanne Smith, it is so good to see you. And this comes at a really historic time since we are celebrating the 250th anniversary of the United States and trying to connect it to what we're doing here in North Florida. And we hope this is not going to be too much of a reach because when I was doing a little bit of backgrounding on our conversation here, discovered to my vast chagrin that a lot of folks believe that the Tallahassee area and North Florida in general had little to nothing to do with the Revolutionary War or the founding of America, that we were sort of a colony come lately. We were not part of the original 13.
No, we weren't. We weren't, Tom. And thank you for having this conversation. But no, we were not part of the original 13 colonies. We were part of the 26 or more colonies. There's like, depending on how you count the British colonies, there were 13 that were a part of the rebellion in the Revolution, but then there were others, and Florida was part of the British side at that point. So at the same time, people think, oh, they didn't have anything to do it. But in a lot of ways, the American Revolution also impacted how our area was formed with people and that moved here. But, you know, Tom, I am very interested in our local history. And so I've done a lot of research on it. I've done a lot of stories on our local community. But really, our local historical organizations are the ones where if you want to learn more, that's where to go.
And in the run-up to the Revolution, too, because perhaps the reason that so many folks think we didn't have much to do with the whole 1776 deal was the emphasis that we have had on the Spanish Mission Trail, which was predominantly a North Florida phenomenon, right. Mission San Luis being here in Tallahassee. And that was all Spanish until the unfortunate, should we say, visitation of the British in 1704. They did not leave much behind.
No.
And but it was still that's when it changed.
Yeah. Well, it stayed under Spanish rule until 1763. And it actually was a result of the Seven-Year War, the French and Indian War. And that's when the British gave up like Cuba and exchanged it for Florida. And it was interesting that they decided to do that. That was part of the treaty at the end of the Seven-Year War. So British got East and West Florida, and they were doing their thing. And when the American Revolution came along a few years later, some of the loyalists from the southern colonies to the British were moving down into this area. But then that changed at the end of the American Revolution because Spain got involved in the American Revolution. They kind of came late to the war there, but they did. And as a result, they got some prizes at the end of it with the Treaty of Paris. And so Florida went back to Spain at that point. So really, the entire American Revolution, we were under British rule, but plenty of Spanish roots to go with that.
So that's why there are all those flags out there in Pensacola, right?
Yeah. No, that's a whole nother story. But actually, Florida stretched all the way over to the Mississippi River at that point. So, I mean, we, you know, parts of Alabama, parts of Louisiana were all part of Florida back then.
Who were some of the luminaries, though, during that particular period, names that most folks might recognize when it comes to us here in North Florida and across the U.S., actually?
Well, I mean, probably one of the biggest ones is the Marquis de Lafayette that everybody talks about. And even here, you probably might have recognized that name, Lafayette. We got Lake Lafayette. We got street name Lafayette. We've got subdivisions named after Lafayette. And he was a military general from France who provided some big time support. And if you've watched the musical Hamilton, he was America's favorite fighting Frenchman. And he provided money and political support during the American Revolution. And then 50 years later-ish, as a way to say thank you, the John Quincy Adams gave him on the 4th of July in 1825. He gave them a 6-square-mile tract of Tallahassee in this area to say thank you, along with supposedly reimbursing him. He had run under some hard times at that point, and he owned about 36 miles of Tallahassee, starting at the meridian and going to the northeast. So if you've gone down Mahan and have seen all those things that say Lafayette on it, and you've been on area that was once owned by the Marquis de Lafayette, like if you've been to Costco, you've been on areas by Lafayette. If you've been to McClay Gardens, you've been on land that was once owned by the Marquis de Lafayette. I just always find that really interesting. And he also encouraged people to come here. He was friends with Prince Murat, who had come here. He was also friends with Richard Call, who was one of the first governors as well. And Richard Call was the man who created the Grove. He was the one who suggested that portion of land to the Marquis because it was close to his property. So it's very interesting. And that was just one person. But ironically, the Marquis never set foot here in Tallahassee. He had other people do that business, but he never came here.
Well, he would not be the first developer about whom all that could be said, I think, Suzanne.
No, that's true. And in fact, he kind of got swindled towards the end. And some of the people who moved here under his word got swindled toward the end. But that's a whole nother story. Another luminary would be Richard Keith Call, who was, like I said, the one of the early governors of our area. He was born after the American Revolution, but his father and his uncle both served in it. So he probably grew up on stories of the American Revolution. And a lot of people who moved here after we became a territory and then became a state, they were children and grandchildren of the American Revolution. So after America got control of Florida, The people who moved here were the children and grandchildren of the American Revolution.
Yeah, and here's another tie-in, too, because we both had an opportunity to speak with a descendant of a very prominent name. If you go to the Old City Cemetery, you will see a very prominent monument that bears the name Westcott. And a few blocks away is, of course, Westcott Hall at Florida State University, the admin building and the home of Ruby Diamond Concert Hall.
Yeah, it's amazing just that connection. I mean, Christine Emanuel, who wrote two books, they're actually part one and part two. And you, like you said, you and I both had a chance to talk with her. And it was just so interesting, the research that she's done on her family. And one of the things is one of her family members, more than one of her family members, served in the American Revolution. And his descendants came here to Tallahassee, and one served as territorial secretary of state, and also he filled in as governor when Duval was not around. And then his son became one of the justices for the Florida Supreme Court. So, I mean, in the early, early years, and he donated money to Florida, well, before it was Florida State University, he donated it to the West Florida Seminary, and, you know, things that actually made a big difference in our community and things that still are here today.
Let's hear a little bit of the conversation that we had with the descendant of these Westcott people, Suzanne.
Tell me about this book that you created.
I published in January the book, The Westcott Story, and it's a story of the enduring spirit of an American family spanning 400 years and 14 generations in America. And it just so happens to be my mother's matrilineage that I followed, not only 14 years in America, but I traced 22 generations going back to my 17 times great-grandfather in the year when he was born, 1234, in Devonshire, England. There were eight generations living, and they were very tied to monarchs in England during those centuries. And my grandfather, nine times great-grandfather, Richard Westcott, came here in the 1630s. And the story traces them from there.
Tell me about John Westcott. Captain?
He became a captain. So John Westcott is my five times great-grandfather, and he would be Gen 5 of 14 in America. And he studied, or rather he taught mathematics, surveying, a number of navigation, and then he decided he wanted to become a merchant. And then he decided he wanted to leave where they lived in Bridgeton, southern New Jersey. And by the way, it was his two times great-grandfather who settled in New Jersey.
They gone from Connecticut. Pensacola to...
Not Pensacola, this is all...
Or not Pensacola, Pennsylvania to New Jersey.
No, the Westcotts, Stukely and the three brothers started in Salem, Massachusetts. And Stukely then, a year or two later, went to Rhode Island and was a co-proprietor, one of the first 12 in the colony of Rhode Island. And my grandfather Richard and his brother went to Connecticut and Wethersfield, Connecticut. And from there, his son, my eight times great-grandfather, went from Connecticut to New Jersey. So there were literally six generations of Westcotts in my line that settled in New Jersey. So John Westcott decides to break ranks, and he decides that he wants to become a merchant, and he decides that he wants to go to Philadelphia. He takes his wife and his kids to Philadelphia, and he didn't have many children at that time, when the war broke out. And he was there recruiting in New Jersey, and he immediately came back from Philadelphia to honor his duty to America and to our freedom and independence. And he was assigned, there were two camps, I guess that you'd call them, the Eastern and the Western, and he went, became a captain of artillery in the Western company, if you will, not camp, company. And during the Revolutionary War, he fought in five battles in New Jersey, and it was so interesting. New Jersey is a very, very important state at that time because it was centrally located among the 13 colonies, and it was between where the Loyals were and where the capital in Philadelphia was becoming, had it been at that time, not yet. And so he became a captain at the point that he, with George Washington, literally on his boat, crossing the Delaware, that epic scene that was directed by Henry Knox, the general, and the rest is history. So there's some information, a fascinating history, about what those people went through. You know, they were given a felt cap, a pair of stockings, and shoes, and that was it. And they were to bring their own arms to fight, and they did. And so once he finished duty, he returned to Philadelphia and, and continued on with his life.
How did you know what he had done? How did you find out about his background?
It was documented in these family history books.
Okay.
That's how I learned an incredible amount of information.
So was he actually on the boat with Washington?
He was on the boat. He was on the boat. And it was the question in terms of did this really happen is Emanuel Lutz was from Germany, and the famous painting of Washington crossing the Delaware, he painted that, but other people did that same depiction. Well, John Westcott's grandson was asked by one or two painters to stand as place of his grandfather, who was on the boat, and he has him carrying the flag. And so that's how we kind of know some of that history. But I don't know who the artist was. Was it Lutz, or was it, there's a gentleman named W-E-I-R, Weir, who is fairly famous, but certainly not like Emanuel Lutz.
So it's one of those paintings. He was...
The grandson depicted his dad was seated so that he could be painted. It was John who was definitely on the boat. I say definitely. Yeah. I base it on the history that I have documented.
Was he at Valley Forge, I guess, during the winter there? Or
don't know. Didn't see any reference to that in my research.
And you had mentioned in the stuff that you'd sent me, Nathaniel Sackett. He was the first cousin of, so he was a cousin of John Westcott.
He was actually a cousin of William Sackett, who was another of my five times great grandfathers.
On the other side of the family.
On another side of the family. I mean, I traced so many.
Each
generation, I took each family as far back as I could go.
That's crazy. So,
but Nathaniel Sackett was quite a person.
Yeah. Real briefly, can you just tell me what Nathaniel Sackett was known for during the war?
He was known as a patriot above all. And I would tell you that during the Battle of Lexington, which kicked off the American Revolution, he was in New York. He heard that this just happened. He went back home to an hour north in New York. And he, with others, organized 40 people whose mission was to uncover and defeat conspiracies that might be going on as the war's getting ready to start, or it did start with that first battle. So he ultimately was George Washington as general, his head of Secret Service, really, or rather, would you call it Secret Service at the time, to detect and defeat any conspiracies, to arm, to recruit and arm people. These are all civilians. He was never in the military. And it's incredible. He was totally relied on by general, respected by Washington, respected by everyone, and saw it through the entire war. And then he went home. He became a state legislator for a term in New York, and then retired altogether.
When did the Westcott and the Sackett family come together?
They came together with my, let's see, she would have been my two times great-grandmother, Joanna Sackett Gould. And her mother was a Sackett, and then I traced those all the way up.
Okay.
And by the way, Nathaniel Sackett is featured in a TV series that you may have seen, I never did, called Turn, America's Spies, Washington Spies, rather.
So tell me about James Diamond Westcott III. Tell me about him.
He was a lawyer, and then he served as a legislator. He was asked to assume a role, and I think it was attorney general. Weeks, months later, change of plans. We want you to be a jurist on the Florida Supreme Court. And now this is post-Civil War, and now we're dealing with the Reconstruction era. And you can just imagine what the cases would be that he was considering at that time.
Why did he want to leave money to West Florida Seminary?
He, you may recall at one point, there was East and West seminaries. It was established very early on in Florida's history. And he was a student of the West Florida Seminary. And so when he, putting his will together, he wanted his estate without having issue of his own to go to his alma mater.
Does it surprise you that your family had such an impact on America and on Florida?
100%. I knew nothing about these people other than I thought that I knew that they came during at least as far back as the American Revolution. I knew nothing and blown away. And you know, the fact that I opted to weave history very intentionally into the storyline from page one, I mean, that was providential because, I mean, these people are still living history, you know? They really are. I mean, extraordinary characters through Gen 13. And we'll see what Gen 14 comes up with, the fledglings among us.
Through the generations from the American Revolution to Florida's early years, to the James Diamond Westcott III, what would you say were some running themes regarding what the family believed
and
practiced?
Christian faith, number one. This notion of patriotism. And I come back to the conviction of their beliefs. They put action behind their words and their beliefs because of their public service. I mean, these were public servants in very influential roles. And it wasn't just one, it was so many of them. So, you know, that had to carry through generations. And I don't know, I can tell you that even with my own siblings, there are nine of us, there were some very, very accomplished, successful people among my siblings. And I didn't have any reason to trace it to anything. And now that I know my maternal lineage story, I totally see these things cascading down, and I find it fascinating.
When you were a student at FSU, you didn't know that the Westcott Administration Building was named
I had
after.
No idea. I saw it was a Westcott building, and I remembered hearing Westcott, as I told you, as a kid, that was somehow connected, but my gosh, I had no idea.